Welcome to the Think Data podcast, brought to you in partnership with Dataworks. If you want to stay up to date with the latest breakthroughs and trends in the world of data and artificial intelligence, and if you're curious about some of the strategies that companies and founders use to launch data and AI products, then you're in the right place. Our aim is to bring together a diverse lineup of fantastic guests, from the founders through to accomplished leaders and product owners at some of the most fascinating data and AI companies worldwide. They will each offer you their own unique insight into what it takes to launch and scale a great data business. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Think Data podcast in partnership with Dataworks. This is episode 3 of the 3rd season, and I'm pleased to welcome Jean-Louis to the show. JL is the founder and CEO of Gladia. They are a French-based speech recognition and audio analysis startup, and I'm really pleased and excited to have you on today, JL. I know it's a space that we've seen a lot of kind of AI automation and, you know, it's only on the speech side, and I think one of our note-taking products, you're obviously one of your clients. We're beginning to see this everywhere. So I'm really interested to touch on, you know, what your background is and kind of what brought you to launch that, because it's not been as straightforward, has it? I know there's been a few bumps in the road, but obviously you're a growing business, a French-based startup, French employees. So I'm really interested to dig on that. So yeah, over to you.
Thank you for having me, Alex. Really appreciate that you welcomed me on this podcast.
Pleasure.
So yeah, it's not a straightforward journey, actually. Probably the most like weird one. I'm an engineer, and I was actually a mechanical engineer focusing on fluid mechanics. And then during my studies, I started to be bored of France, especially Paris. So during my last year, I did another degree in Montreal in the expert system, which is kind of the ancestor of machine learning. We're not saying machine learning at the time, we're saying expert systems and Markov chain and stuff like that. And then I started to work in big data industry because it's very tied to Bayesian statistics and stuff like that. And moving along, I become closer and closer to what is now called like modern machine learning and AI. And then after spending like quite some years in Canada, we moved back to France, work at OVH Cloud, the biggest European cloud provider. And there I was doing like, of course, leading all the AI, machine learning, big data efforts, and even quantum at some point. And decided to create my startup. And the problem that I had, to be frank, is that I kind of backed a lot of startups as a business angel for quite some years, and I was kind of well recognized in the ecosystem, and I raised money without having actually a business. So I had this open source software that I've made on the side, but I have no plan, no monetization, like most of the engineers when they start a startup. So you have no PMF, and you have a great tech. You felt in love with your great tech. You start to raise money very easily because I helped many people. At the time, and then too much money makes you make stupid decision, things that you're on track, you raise money, that was the goal. And actually the goal is the PMF, and having too much money can mislead you. So at the beginning I was having this API that was doing like 500 different tasks in AI, speech recognition, like image recognition, etc., a bit of everything. And by doing everything, we saw that we were doing nothing and we would die from it, from the lack of focus. So we had to revamp our strategy, I would say, if we had a strategy at some point. But basically, we designed an octopus, and the octopus was like, hey, this is the tech we have in the center. And what are the business functions you have in a company? So you have CEO, all the CXO that we call them, like CTO, COO, CFO. I can go CSO, I can go on and on and on. And on each branch, we said, what is great tech that we have done, is able to solve. And we started to put like some use cases. And then we started to call everyone in our network that were a CXO or a VP of, head of. And we started to put like some ticks nearby each of the use cases, or adding new use cases every time. And this is where we landed at some point, that everyone was like having trouble in the customer service ecosystem with speech recognition, because it was super slow, it was very bad quality and extremely expensive. And this is where we say, oh, great, then we have a repeated pattern of a need of a budget, of people willing to pay, willing to go further, but where there is no actual solution on the market. And this is where we started to be actually focusing. It took us 3 months to rebuild the product. So when I say rebuild, I'm putting quotes for the people that are listening, which is basically throwing away all your code base and starting back from scratch when when you have a product. So we burned probably we burned 200, 300 by doing some crazy stupid things at the beginning. It took us like a few months to realize it was like completely stupid. And then this is where we started to focus, and this is where the market started to arise, because we were proposing an API that nobody had on the market.
Interesting. I'm looking forward to digging on that kind of the raising capital piece and the how that sometimes leads to poor decision making. Because it's interesting, your point is really valid. People think that's the end goal, don't they? Raising capital, having that kind of multiplier and the exit, but actually, and it's refreshing you say that. A lot of people will probably not get this, but it actually could lead to huge problems, actually having too much capital and you say burning that money because the money's there and you can make decisions. But I'm interested to touch on Gladio, and you know, you had the Octopus, you're kind of looking at all these different solutions, you're looking at your customer base, you're looking at what solution ultimately would be bought and people would need. You know, talk to you about Gladio, and obviously we talk about speech recognition, audio analysis, but, and you know, you've only got to go online. There's lots of companies who say they do it, but in terms of Gladio, how did you approach it, and what is the solution, and kind of what makes you guys stand out?
So there are not that many solutions, actually. There are many of companies that are wrapping help some other providers.
Interesting. Okay.
So without giving names, there are some people that are extremely well known in the space and they say they do, but in fact, they are like partially do it. They do it usually in English and then they use subcontractors for the other languages. There are people that are like apps and web apps and they say they do like speech recognition, but they are actually wrappers of different providers. So there are very few people that have actually some foundation model or models behind the scene that are actually providing the service.
Interesting.
So that's a common problem that it's hard to understand, because usually when you're going for fundraising, people are like, hey, what's your position versus Riverside or versus Descript or versus like, you know, like we do speech recognition. Like actually those people could be some of our customers. Think about like Lifestorm, it's a customer of us, but people will see that as, or V.io, they have speech recognition, but that's Gladio behind the scene. So that's a common misunderstanding that people were going to have. Going back to your question, which was like, how do you stand out from the competition? It's a bit like everything, I would say. Quality is the number one item, price and speed. And I think most of the problems in AI are related to this triangle that you need to solve. There is a fourth aspect that you need to think about, this triangle, which looks more like a pyramid. In LLM, when you go into language, natural language understanding, natural language like NLU, NLP, LLMs, and speech recognition, etc., is the language coverage. So basically, you have quality, speed, price, and language. And you can't have everything. It's not possible to have everything. So you're going to have some players that are going to be like speed, and then they're going to have quality, but the price is going to be like crazy high. Sometimes you're going to have like speed, it doesn't matter, but the quality and the price are the two factors, are the quality and the multilingual, etc. So, and what you need to think about and how to position, and that's, you need to think about all the players and who's doing what in this like four-dimension type of pyramid. And you have a market, and the market has two axes. It's low volume, high price, or high volume, low price. And you can't play everywhere. Okay, except when you have a moat. So think about 11 labs in text-to-speech. They have a moat. They are definitely like they have the best model. I think now it's getting a bit tougher and tougher, and you will see the price going to change. But when you have a moat like 11 labs, you can define your price whatever the volume is, right? But it's not going to last long. People are going to try. It's going to be able to replicate. And the reason people are going to be able to replicate is because AI, especially in the synthetic AI, think about LLM and TTS, and the example of DeepSeek is a good example. When you have synthetic data, Yeah. When you have synthetic data, anyone can reproduce your system because there are infinite data they can access to. So when you have infinite data to train your model, you have infinite data to reproduce. So that's what happened to DeepSeek. They actually used OpenAI data to train their reinforcement model. Then you can start to replicate. So in AI, like copyright and all this IP protection is kind of hard. So but what I mean is like it all comes to two things. High volume, low price. Low volume, high price. So if you think about speech recognition, are you going to address the media, subtitlings of movies, subtitling the series, subtitling of the news, for instance? Or are you going to address like super high volume, but you need low price, like call centers? But you can price the same thing for something that has millions and millions of hours to something that is, let's say, the top. Think about BBC, for instance, or NBC or whatever news that you're going to think about. The biggest media you're going to have, they're going to be capped. Maximum is 24 hours per day, 365 days per year. You can't get over that. While the call center is infinite, right? So it all comes to those two things. And you're going to see like people like Together AI for LLM. They definitely choose high speed, high volume. They don't have the best models. And then you have OpenAI or Claude. They used to have the best model. Sometimes they have not the best speed, right? And the price is usually high. So you would have all those axes.
Interesting. I know you touched on it right at the beginning about that kind of that PMF piece, because it's a lot of companies, especially once they've raised, I think you go to your investor community, you raise capital based on, you know, maybe it's your ARR, it's your product, but actually a lot of companies where they typically fall over is that kind of defining product market fit and actually understanding, are we needed or how are we going to be needed and how are we going to stand up? So what you touched right at the beginning on the intro, some of the steps you took to understand that PMF and actually some of the challenges you'd overcome. What kind of comes to light as one of the biggest challenges when you're actually looking at that, the kind of the tentacles of that kind of octopus and thinking, how are we going to really define what we do here?
Even now, I don't think we still have product market fit. We have good ARR, we have good multiples over the year. But I still don't think that we have a clear PMF, and it's going to take a bit of time. The most frustrating thing with PMF, it takes time and you can't compress this time. There are ways that you can compress a little bit. And the magic for that is very simple. It's the same as the atomic bomb, right? Mm. It's exponential connections. Okay. Like in the magic bomb, you have like an atom that's going to break an atom into two atoms, and those two atoms going to break two atoms each, etc. It's the same thing. You talk to one person and who's the expert in the domain, and then you ask them who has the three most relevant person that you should talk to understand this market, and they're going to redirect you to three persons. And those three persons, you ask each of them, what are the most three relevant person we should talk to? And you start to do that at scale, and then at some point you become aware of all the signals that gives you an idea where to go, but doesn't mean that you're done. I don't think you can. It's hard to raise on the PMF at seed stage. It's hard to raise on a product at seed stage, because I think, like I said, I've backed around 50 companies over the last, like I would say, 8 years, 7-8 years. Most of them, it's very rare that you're going to have one idea that's going to become actually the success story. There are very few of them. I'm thinking about one in the portfolio is CorePlay. But guess what? They are second time founder.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you see that. Think about Romain Huet, for instance. Very super smart guy. He used to have a company, then was like, after selling the company, he's like looking around and what should I do? What is my next gig, etc. And it's funny when you see that with second-time founders, they know the tech is not the problem. They know the money is not the problem. Mm. They know the marketing won't be a problem. They know hiring won't be the problem. They know the only problem is like to build something that people actually want and that people are attracted to and people will buy. And that's why you see a lot of the time second-time founders that are thinking and thinking and thinking and say, why don't you launch something? Because they're not crazy anymore. They know they don't need money or capital to make the company successful. They need to have the good idea on the right market with the right people, etc. And you see them like being kind of frozen, and you have something crazy with first-time founder that they don't know anything and nothing is impossible. Like kids, I will go to the moon. Yes, we'll be an astronaut, of course. And you know this, like the likelihood is one over like 10 billion. I'm exaggerating, but that's kind of it. And then you look at second-time founders and they know they live the life and then they're reborn and they know like, this is not doable. And at the end, like kind of do kind of nothing and they are kind of frozen.
It's so like that's the power of hindsight, isn't it? They've been down that path before. They kind of, they sense that this isn't right. And yeah, you're interested in the amount of kind of founders that are 2-3 time failed founders. Well, not failed necessarily, but their product isn't necessarily end up where it wanted to, but actually the third time that's when it goes.
So again, PMF is the hardest thing and you can't decide.
No.
And it's the worst thing about that is it's not about you being smart or anything. It's about luck.
Mm.
You have some insights that's going to help you. Like we did the Octopus. Yes, of course. Like you're reducing the probability of failing by a very high portion. That's for sure. But the thing is like being aware of your biases and remove the biases all the time. Trying to remove, like I said, the first thing we did is like throwing away all the code, which is hard. It took me a year. So the first thing we did, archive the GitHub repository.
Yep.
And it took me a year to click on delete button, actually.
Oh, so, wow. Painful.
It was painful. But what I mean is like, you can reduce the probabilities, etc. But at some point, there is something about the market. And we were lucky because when we launched this thing, it was in February 2022, I guess. Or 2023, sorry, 2023. So 2 years ago. And then what happened 2 years ago? A year and a half ago, in September 2023, something happened. It was ChatGPT.
And so changed everything.
Changed everything because you used to have your transcriptions, which was like mainly business oriented and you need to do quality control and stuff like that. But then you started to have a wide adoption. I can put my YouTube there. I can get the transcription. I can make a resume. I can chat with the transcription. And it changed all the paradigms of people who are, how they were behaving with voice. And voice became one of the most interactive way to communicate with computers. And that's what we are seeing now. And actually one of my VC, and I won't name him. I said him, you have a hint, but I had a lot of mail in the VC space. He told me a year and a half ago, voice business is a whole business is for older elderly people, and he was right at the time. I think it's been there since like the 1950s or something like that, 1960s. But now what you see is like it's become probably one of the most hype things in the last like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, so I can relate.
And nobody could have been anticipating that, right?
No,
so we were lucky.
Absolutely. And you know, on scale, we're from a small recruitment company, but obviously on our first call, you actually recognized the note taker that we were using. And on your point about the languages, it's because we got a French business and a US business. And a lot of the ones we tried, I think 5 or 10, none of them could dictate the French language as well as the US. So actually that's where we landed. But I think if you put this on scale contact centers, you know, this is where we're seeing all that insight being driven from these kind of speech analytics. So it's I think your founder probably, your VC probably was somewhat right, but he probably wasn't expecting the shift in the market in 2023 when GPTs came out and then boom, everyone's using speech.
So to give you an idea on the call centers, how fast it's going, and it's exactly how ChatGPT is pushing the boundaries of the business. Okay. Probably that's going to be one of the most disrupted business called BPO, business process outsourcing, so call centers.
Yeah.
It's $300 billion in payroll every year for people that are picking up the phone and calling you, right? And you know, 20 to 40% will be automated. It's insane.
Yeah.
So you think, okay, maybe AI is going to take over. No, that's not how it works. Maybe AI is going to take over. Maybe. So I call it the Netflix versus Blockbuster paradigm, right?
What
is Blockbuster? What used to be Blockbuster? They used to be about having real estates everywhere. Like you have some real estate everywhere and you're like 5 minutes run from your house, okay? Having a great supply chain, meaning like after 2 days, you have the last die-hard, okay? That were and the good distributions, good deals with the distributions, okay, with the distributors, and being now into the cloud. Think about Netflix. Even if Netflix didn't start it this way, but they had this thing about like being the materialized, like the materiality of those supply chains and stuff was broken.
Yeah.
You don't need real estate. It's in your TV. You don't need to be 5 minutes away from house because it's like you're like 5 seconds to the remote, right? And at some point, you don't have to deal with distributions, your own distributor. You're doing your own movies and your own series. And they kind of break the thing. But just imagine that you're in an industry, you're like 25 years old, and all your business has been optimized on these supply chains, right? On these supply chains and real estate. And you've been like challenged by this new company. All the processes internally are changed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going back to BPO, it's the same thing. What is the thing? Real estate. We have a 24 cover of your customer support needs. We are able to open a new office in a new country in like a month and recruit the people around. Right? That's what they do. It's blockbuster. They are buying the real estate. The supply chains, which used to be the VHS for BPO, is the people. You have people coming and going. You have to hire them. You have to train them. And then you need to make them into actions. Exactly the same thing as the blockbuster. And then all of a sudden, you have this Netflix popping up. We are available 24/7. We don't have limitations of number of people you need to hire. And we have like we are like real estate less. And then your cost goes from $25 per people to $5 per agent per hour. And you need to reduce your cost by 5, which is an industry that has been shrank by a lot in the last years. So what do they do? Do they embrace the change? Yes, but it's very hard. I think about Teleperformance, it's 500,000 people, company. Super freaking hard to change. But you still have this expertise of like real estate and people. So what you can open new countries with lower wages, right? And you can use the technology to still leverage your expertise, which is like real estate and hiring. So you can hire in very low wage countries, open new low wage countries, and then use AI to do real-time translation. So you still keep your processes and your way to do your things while the transformation is being happening. And what we've seen is that the BPOs are changing, like the offshoring is going at a 30% per year pace. 30% of relocation towards like real-time translation to keep addressing the same people, the same customers, but having like this reduction of cost because they know they're going to fight against $5. So they need to find people that are $5 per hour. So it's funny how it's behaving and how it's changing, but that's definitely like probably one of the biggest revolution. And multilingual, as you can see, multilingual can't be decorrelated from the change that we are living. It's global. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not only English type of revolution.
Yeah, I think you're right, the nail on the head there in terms of these companies are global, and obviously if their customer base is, you know, they could be speaking to anyone globally at any one time, and actually having just a contact center that is just speaking English or just speaking French or Spanish, then imagine if you can have them all delivering the same service and across every country. I think it's really powerful, and I'm really, you said something right at the beginning about which I referenced as well about the limitations, some of the risks when you raise capital. You know, I think when we talked on our kind of kickoff in a couple of weeks back, it was interesting because upon reflection, from what you said, you would do it again. If you did it again, you'd do it differently. What do you mean by that?
I mean, I was young, younger, yeah. Not that young. I was already having 3 kids, so I think you're not young when you have 3 kids.
Are you telling me?
you're older than what you think in general when you have 3 kids. But what I mean is like, I think you innovate better under constraint, especially under financial constraint, because you spend less time thinking about things that are useless and more time about what needs to be solved. And you have this sentiment of urgency. So if I were to do it again, I did a price round, which was like stupid. I actually listened to many people and I took money from different institutions. Having too much money made me like spend time on stupid things. If I were to do it again, I would take only business angels.
Interesting.
I would go to YC as the other thing, especially that I'm French.
Yeah.
I think there is no... So far, I don't know YC how it is now, but I know what it was used to be in the past. And I think there is, it's hard to have a better school than YC. Looking at all the content. And I know it's expensive. I think it's like 7% for 150 or something like that. And then they have a follow-up round or preferred. I don't remember exactly what they have, but the conditions, but I think whatever the conditions, the PMF and going to find the PMF as a quick pace doesn't have a price at this stage.
No.
You have 100% of something that worth zero. remember that.
Yeah.
And you give 7% of something that's worth zero. That is worth zero, right?
Mm.
And probably the 7% and money you're going to give is going to bring your company to whatever valuation, but we don't care about the valuation because valuation is not money on your bank account. What's important is the bright people you're going to meet, the community you're going to have, the time from the people. So for instance, you have Nicola from Algolia there. You have plenty of brilliant entrepreneurs. Mm. Their time worth more than the money you're going to have in your bank account. And so what I mean by that, I think it's the best school and you're giving higher chance of success. And so I would take probably this money from YC. I would take some business angels like I did, but like more business angels, more entrepreneurs that were successful, and leverage that and avoid having VCs as much as I can from the beginning. I think VCs are good, but maybe not at this stage. And that's my personal opinion. Unless you're a second time founder and you need a lot of capital and you already had learned the lessons the hard way.
No, I think to anyone listening, I think it's a really good point because I think we, as I said at the beginning, it's a lot of founders or certainly companies we see and support, they're very public around the capital that they're raising and the valuations and the multipliers. But actually, there's been a lot of stories in the US alone where some of these companies have raised huge series B, C, D rounds and they've gone bust. You know, they've just, you know, and actually that, you know, on your point. So just to dig on that, you feel that as a developer at heart and a programmer, you're more focused on delivering quality solution with real blinkers on when you haven't got the capital around you. Is that what it obviously gives you, kind of, does it just hone your attention almost? You're not getting distracted?
Not even that. I would be even more radical than that.
Yeah.
If I were to do it. So one of the problems were like people were saying it's too expensive. That's not a problem. You have money on your bank account, so you can have negative margins and try to find a market fit to find the right price.
Mm.
Who cares? So use another another provider solution. Cut the price. You take the problem of the margin and you try to find a market. You're going to figure out later how to handle your own technology. The second thing I would do is like it was too slow. So I'm just going to give you examples, right? So there is a paradigm that you have in computing. It's called MapReduce or divide and conquer. You call it whatever you want. Like when you have a problem that is hard and long, you're going to split it into little pieces and then it's going to be easier to solve. So maybe there are ways in speech recognition that you can split your audio, for instance, and instead of taking like 45 minutes, you can split it into 45 segments of 1 minute and make the system run at 1 minute length, like everywhere, and being 45 requests in parallel and get a result in 1 minute and you're 45 times faster than anyone. So if you ask me if I were to do it, I wouldn't care about the cost. I would do this like map on map reduce or whatever if the problem is the speed. If the problem is the cost, I would just take the money on my side and solve the problem of the cost. And then I would propose a solution and say, do you like it? Is it fast enough? Do you need it faster? Slower? Is the price okay? Is it okay if I put it at like 30 cents more or 30 cents less? And I will iterate. That's one person job. You have an idea, you have a market, it's one person. Maybe it's even like, let's say 8 hours, 10 hours work maximum. And you can start with a good product. And then you say, hey, I have distractions. I have this customer. I'm going to sign a big customer. I don't know, whatever, like a big retail provider. The contract is going to be like, I'm saying stupid things. Let's say $500,000. Then you go to the VC and now you say, hey, I have this customer. I have these solutions. I need $4 million now to make it industrial. And then you start to build your model. That's how I would do it.
Interesting. Yeah, it's almost get the commitment, the signal of intent, then go and get the money to deliver on that.
Because it's proving that you have customer willing to pay for the time. No, you have all your descriptions of the problem. You just need like no to fill the blank. You remove what's inside and then you fill the blank and then you change it and then you're done and then you have your company. It was super efficient, super capital efficient. And the time to PMF is like super, super, super fast. So if you ask me what I would do, that's what I would do.
Yeah, no, I like it. You know, I'm looking forward to people's comments on that because I think it's a really refreshing view on it. And look, Gladia are growing. They're a business. I think we touched on this. You're actually looking a big focus on international expansion in terms of your product reach and also yourself as well. Talk to me about building a company in terms of headcount. And what I mean by that is, I think you said something, you know, finding the people's fine, you know, this is all okay. But actually, with you traveling, with your business being mainly remote, yes, it's a French business, but how do you keep a handle on that culture? And how do you keep a handle on making sure everyone is really focused on delivering what you need them to be when you can't necessarily be watching them all the time and managing them? Talk to me about that, because I think that's where a lot of founders struggle, is actually just relinquishing that control, because it's your baby, it's your business. Talk about that.
So I think that's probably one of the hardest things for founders is to give the control. On my hands, it's very, we say in French, but I think we say the same thing in English, like fish get rotten by the head. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that's exactly that.
So you're the head. So if it's rotten, you are the problem. So what I think is like you need to find great leaders or great future leaders. And when you hire, you always have, especially at the beginning, you always have to think about, if I'm hiring this person, is this person going to be a good manager in the future? Okay. If it's not okay, then you need to find the next person that's going to be a good manager in the future that you have full trust in. And you need to give the full trust. So the trust is not something that you have from the beginning. That's something that you need to show to your managers in general, right? And the only way on my side to go fast enough is to give them from the beginning the trust. And they're going to make mistakes. And I'm going to take the responsibility for it. Okay? But what I've seen is like the speed of the business depends on how much autonomy you give them and how much trust you give them. And if they make a mistake, you just say, hey, man, you did a mistake. That's okay. Fix your shit.
Yeah.
And move on. And stop complaining or stop blaming yourself.
Yeah.
Just like you did like 1,000 decisions, one was wrong. I don't want you to blame yourself and I won't blame you, because like the 999, it would have taken me like probably a year to coordinate with you. And I'd rather you to fail and fix than asking. So I think it's the Navy SEALs or something like that says like better ask for forgiveness than for permissions or something like that.
Yeah, it's a really good saying. I think I live by that.
And if the person is making stupid things when they have your trust, then you should fire them. Mm. I'm sorry, I'm being like very direct, but that's not the people you want on the short and long run, right?
Agreed.
So it all goes back to this. And now that we have a good management, as I said, the fish is getting rotten by the head. I made sure I'm not the one being rotten by having people that are smarter than me on the lower level, and what they are doing, they're trying people that are smarter than them at the lower level, et cetera, et cetera. And the image I take from that, and you say, hey, what's your role now? I was actually discussing that because I'm going to move to the US in September. And that's actually one discussion I was having with my ex-com, executive committee, was sometimes you have some decisions that you as a founder know are good, but the rest of the team can't feel. And it's like if you were having a baby that is burning at the third floor and the house is burning because it's a startup. Everything is burning apart.
Yeah.
Your margin is shit and then it becomes good. But when they become good, you're becoming slow and then you have the competition. It's always burning. That's a good sign. Okay. The thing is like every part of your body, let's say, hey, that's the tech. Hey, that's the marketing and then the sales. So you have the ends and the legs are the sales and the hands are the marketing and the other hand is the tech, etc. Everyone that will enter the building will say, hey, it's burning. You need to have a step back. And what I'm going to say, no, my baby is burning at the third floor. And so I need everyone of you to accept the pain that's going to happen, because we need to save the baby. Mm-hmm. And only the head know that the baby is there, and only the head can go over any reflex that the body is going to have, because you're going to do everything to save the baby. Mm. And they can't be aware of that. And the spin that is connecting your brain to your arms and stuff are, to me, in my opinion, they are the product management that are the one that are actually delivering the strategy to the rest of the company. So that's why I say you need to have yes people in the product management. You need to have positive people in the product management, because it's going to burn. Guys, we're going to go in there. We're going to save the baby. I know you don't want, I know you feel it's a bad idea, but I'm telling you, yes, we won't burn, but on the long run, the baby is going to die.
Yeah.
So do it I'm there to support you. Be positive. It's going to go well. It's going to go well. And all the time you're in the fire, that it's going to go well. And your brain is saying that, but the spin is pushing your body to go further and further, because otherwise it would have stepped back and you never, I would have said the baby. Mm. That's how I see it. So you need, and you're not telling, your brain is not telling your arms to say, hey, move right, move left. And it's not telling your foot to say, hey, you have to put like this part of the body, of the foot there and there. You don't think about all movement you're going to make, right? The spin takes control of this execution, right? But your brain is pushing harder. And that's the, you can call it culture, you can call it like leadership or whatever, but that's actually how I see the company running.
I like that. Yeah, it's the first time I see that analogy, but you know, the house is burning thing is something a lot of founders probably feel, but they very rarely can admit to. And I think, this conversation's been so kind of refreshing and so honest. And I think people paint a very kind of rosy view of a founder. And I think UGL has given a real honest insight. And in a really fast-paced AI-centric startup, which people listening to this, you know, should go and check out, Gladia. We will obviously tag you into when the show episodes, when they go live. We've obviously been following you guys for a while. But no, thanks so much for coming on. It's been a really kind of open and honest and frank, which I think's which is needed. So thanks so much. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a fun conversation too.
Yeah,
being direct as always.
No, I love it. That's the way we like it. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Take care.
Take care.